Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So here's the Media Project. We have himself, Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and we have Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany. We're happy to be with you today, aren't we? Are we happy?
Well, if you were happier, you would have been here on time.
Well, so we'll talk fast. We'll get through the show quickly, right? Fast. It doesn't work that way in radio, does it? Anyway, of course, there's a lot that has been going on in the world of media, most significantly, of course, the seizing of AP phone records by the U.S. Department of Justice that deserves a bit of attention on the Media Project.
It certainly does.
Kind of a remarkable, isn't it?
I've always felt, Rex, that the name of the game here is if you tell the American people we're doing something despicable in order to protect your freedom and your children and your way of life, your American way of life, there always will be a certain number of people who will buy it. And that is exactly what is happening in this case. Perhaps Ira could fill us in on exactly what has happened here.
Well, what has happened was there was a story that the Associated Press worked on regarding a security threat to this country. Apparently such a security threat that the government was desperate to find out who leaked the information, so desperate as to work their way into the phone records, both cell phone, office records, home phones of Associated Press reporters in New York, Hartford, and Washington. And it's an outrage as far as the media is concerned. But to your point, Alan, it's interesting that I think the public, given what they know about it and the specter of security threats, would probably not be terribly concerned that the government has done this, particularly in light of the fact that this is going on at the same time as the Benghazi situation continues to be on the front page and then the IRS scandal. And between the three of them, the outrage regarding this one is probably the least and might even be slight, even if it was by itself, because we're not terribly popular in the press. So people don't sympathize with us very much.
And I think we'll let Rex speak soon. But in the meantime,
catching his breath.
Yeah. But in the meantime, you know, there is a sort of blurring of what is going on here. I think there are some Americans who still think that we were doing this in order to find out who was doing the potential bombing, as opposed to doing it to find out who the leakers were, which is what this is really all about.
And by the way,
it's been permeating the concerns of this particular administration and administrations before this to figure that out.
And the thing that I think is somewhat lost in this is that the Associated Press story that began this intrusion by the government, this break with tradition and with Department of Justice standards, this was a terrorist plot that had already been broken up. This is not something that was ongoing. This was a Yemen-based terrorist plot to bomb an airliner. It was already foiled by the government, and the AP had held off publishing a story about this foiled plot at the White House's request because the intelligence operation was still unfolding. This happens all the time. There is frequently an understanding that stories that represent terrorist threats, there is not publication. This happens in Washington often. And yet, finally, when the AP published the story saying, here's this plot that was broken up, then the Justice Department went forward and started secretly seizing these phone records in a way that really, again, there has long been a social contract between the press and the government so that in sensitive situations, we both do what's best for the country. And the essence of that social contract is based upon trust, that the Justice Department is not going to intrude upon freedom of the press in an unduly necessary way, and that the press will not be careless or reckless in the way that it publishes information, even if it is information that at one time was secret, that it is now obtained. That social contract has been broken by Attorney General Holder.
Do you think, Rex, that it may mean that Attorney General Holder, who seems to be at the bottom of a lot of these controversies, will have to go?
It's hard to see how this would unfold. And as Ira says, I don't know that there's public pressure for that because the general public is more concerned about the
safety.
IRS targeting conservative groups and more concerned about safety. Yes, right. But it does seem to me that there's going to be a long hangover of this in relations between the White House and the media, which have been souring for quite a long time. Now, the president suddenly responded by asking Chuck Schumer to reintroduce his SHIELD bill for federal courts so that there would be legal protection for journalists in dealing with federal jurisdictions in the same way that 48 states and the District of Columbia provided for.
So he punted. So the president is in his pajamas. He's worried about the whole thing at night. And he gets up and says, oh, let's punt on this. But it does seem to be a reversal of their position, doesn't it?
Well, he has Jay Carney, the press secretary, gets up at a press conference the other day, and I counted four, and it may have been five times he used the word unfettered, meaning the president believes in the press's unfettered ability to investigate and gather news. And then in the wake of this revelation of the AP records, the president, as Rex said, has Chuck Schumer reintroduced the media shield bill as if to say, yeah, the media has got to be protected from this. Well, who are we protecting them from? We're protecting them from you. Why did you do this in the first place?
Yeah.
It was your administration. So, you know, if anything good does come out of this, it is we've spoken often on this program about how there is no federal shield law and it's one is necessary and maybe we'll finally get one.
And we've also spoken about how when the press is asked to hold back on stories, it sometimes has disastrous results. We do know that the president of the United States, Jack Kennedy, said that he had wished the Times had gone with the story about the Cuban invasion because it would have protected him from the disaster that happened later on.
Yeah, it is generally true, don't you think, that American people are better served by openness than by secrecy, and that secrecy and cover-ups tend to get politicians in trouble more often,
again
too.
And again.
Again and again.
Right, we're seeing again this week with not one but three problems that the White House is trying to deal with. Right. And ultimately, as we all get carried away, and I don't just mean the media, but as the public gets carried away and gets distracted by these three instances, and the president's critics get distracted by these three incidents, he then has to take his eye off the ball. And how much time is he spending in crisis control mode rather than governing the country, hopefully for the betterment of all of us? And it's just not me saying, oh, woe is Obama. I mean, it seems like every president finds this time in an administration, finds himself in this position. It's awful.
But there's also something to be said about the loyal opposition. And I say loyal, underlined with quotation marks around it. The Mitch McConnells, who self-confessed to the destruction of Barack Obama, wanted to keep him out of the White House, said it was his number one job. And, you know, when these things happen, they are going to be exacerbated by that team. And that is exactly what is happening here. Although I don't see them coming out full square, four square for the press in the United States.
No, that would not be anything like the Republican-led House would be. You know, the thing that's kind of interesting is that it's not as though the Justice Department doesn't have options. And the manual for United States attorneys, the guidelines of the Justice Department say that the first thing you do if you are a prosecutor or if you are the attorney general and you want records from the media, you ask the media organization. You say, can you give me your phone records? the AP probably would have said, no, we're not going to show you our phone records. We're not going to tell you who they are. But the fact is, only then, and with the specific authorization of the Attorney General, in every instance when you subpoena records of media organizations, that's how important the government considers freedom of the press, that when there is when a U.S. attorney around the country wants to subpoena the records of the media, it requires the personal approval of the Attorney General. So this is right at Eric Holder's feet. It was handled right out of his office. And the fact is, you know, he says, well, the leak about how the CIA stopped this plot was a terrorist, was a very grave. It put the American people at risk. But, you know, a government that accrues too much power to itself puts the American people at risk, too. A government that spies on journalists puts Americans at risk. And I just think that that is too far a step to take by the administration. And there has to be some damn good explanation for this.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but balance is an interesting question here. When we see the Tea Party groups and then the gun groups, what are they yelling about with their guns? They're yelling, we need these guns so that when we have a bad outcome in the government, we can fight the government with our guns. And now we have the left sort of protecting freedom of the press. This all gets to be a certain amount of confluence here.
Very interesting.
And, of course, it's the First Amendment, not the Second Amendment. The founders decided that freedom of the press should be the first thing that they should specify. But the other thing that's worth mentioning, I think, or worth reiterating, is what does this mean? What is the long-term implication of these kinds of actions by the government? And among them is if a leaker or if a source is afraid that they're going to be found out because the government is looking at phone records, then it's going to make the sources more reluctant to come forward and provide information that the press and then, of course, the public needs to know about. And it's the so-called chilling effect will occur if people feel that they're afraid to step forward because they'll be found out.
Sure. And with WikiLeaks, for example, you know, you find the guy who did it and you throw him in jail for a huge amount of time, really not proportional to the way in which other criminals are treated, as if to put an explanation mark after that sentence, you better not do this.
You know, there's been a lot of discussion about this is the second term jinx or whatever phrase they use, but the second term woes. And then you look back at the last handful of presidents who particularly had problems, some might use the word scandals, in their second terms. And I not to suggest that the scandals stories were not worth it, but I sometimes wonder whether this is part and parcel of the Washington Press Corps after 5 or 6 years of dealing with they're just sort of looking around and they're bored. You know, we're not into the new administration. There's just sort of a sense of, well, let's find stuff.
Well, I mean, let me put it this way.
I don't know that I'm right. Well, Rex is looking at me quizzically.
Well, you may be right. I mean, look at New York State, for example. What happens is that when a new person is elected, they have a lot of power. I mean, I think that Rex's paper, the Times Union, has done a magnificent job in holding Andrew Cuomo accountable. But I have to say, it comes as his tenure increases, the spate of stories increase also.
Well, George Pataki, his third term, we tired of him. Mario Cuomo, his third term, we tired
of him.
Well,
I tired of Pataki in his first term.
but you can't say, I don't think, that these stories that are emerging in Washington are they're not even reporter created, right?
Right. No, I didn't mean to suggest that. I think that there might be more of a willingness of the media to delve more aggressively as a result of these things, as opposed to shrugging their shoulders and letting them go away. But I don't know. I guess this is not less a media issue than it is a political science issue as to why we think it is that these things do seem to recur regularly in second terms. Iran-Contra, Clinton's impeachment, this case, I'm sure others, Johnson had problems in his second term, his first full term.
Well, this is something the American people have, a constitutional issue that has been with us forever, which is, should you have one term for a president? Should it be 6 years and then that's it, so that you don't get this lame duck, which encourages this kind of attacking, you know, in the second term when somebody is lame duck from the minute they're lame? You know, you may not be a political scientist, Ira, but I think you've had some profound thinking here.
First time this week.
Profound. Very, very impressive. Anyway, by the way, just an interesting point that is sort of an appendage to this. Al Tompkins, who teaches at the Poynter Institute, a longtime television news executive.
You've lectured there, haven't you, at the Poynter Institute?
I've been a fella down there in journalism ethics.
But I mentioned that.
It's a nice place. Very nice, except in the summer. It's very
hot. So the fellows are the males and the females are the sisters. That's the Pointer sisters.
But a boom.
I'm so excited.
I take back every good thing I've said about you.
Now, folks, look how happy he is. Reporters Without Borders, which is an international organization dealing with press freedom, ranked the United States 32nd on its list of countries in terms of press freedom, Al Tompkins points out. The United States was ranked below Ghana, barely above El Salvador. And, you may think, oh, my goodness, how wonderful is press freedom in the United States? Well, yeah, but this shows us, this action by Attorney General Holder shows us that it is not a totally free press in this country. We have a lot of restraints that we have to fight against all the time in order to give people information. I mean, when you consider the government tried to stop the media from revealing the Abu Ghraib prison torture videos, and I think it's important for the American people to know what was going on over there. Yes, it was uncomfortable for the United States, for people, for the world to learn about Abu Ghraib, but I don't think that the American people should have had those misdeeds by their military covered up by the government claiming security was at stake.
Do you think the genie's out of the bottle, Rex?
In the sense
that there is so much anti-press stuff going on right now that it is going to be very hard to bring us back to the point where the media is A, respected by the public, and B, has its rights.
I can't quite imagine what comes next. There are no institutions that are respected by the public. People don't respect churches. They don't respect Congress. I mean, I'm more concerned, rather than respect for the media, frankly, I'm more concerned about the lack of respect for institutions of government. I mean, people don't care about their government. They don't believe the government has
credibility.
Well, if
they lead them away in chains for, you would imagine, you would understand it. But I also have another thesis. Mm-hmm. When you have something like the New York POST and the garbage that they print, or FOX, and the kind of biased journalism that goes on, don't you have a sense that some of this has been brought down upon the whole institution? You keep pointing out, Rex, that the media has many different components to it, and yet people continue to refer to it as the media, as if there's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're embarrassed, I think, by some of this nonsense.
Well, you're right. And media, of course, was initially a plural noun, and we've turned it into a singular and made it seem as though, the Times Union is the same as In Touch magazine or something. I don't know why I thought of that one off the top of my head. I don't know, the National Enquirer, let's say. Or even, you're right, the tabloid in New York, which routinely, I shouldn't say manufactures stories, but it certainly does blow things in the wrong direction, in a direction that doesn't seem entirely appropriate. And so this is why I think we need to have, forgive me for bringing this issue up again, but news literacy training. You need to teach people how to read the media. What is verifiable information? Look at who the sources are, especially as we're moving into the world in which brands of media don't make much difference to people. People are just seeking out information by search and by referral of social media. It's important for people to know what they're getting and to see it and to analyze it.
Well, you're right, of course, but you're right in a way that I consider to be somewhat naive. I mean, I know that you're committed to this news literacy. I know that you have done everything in your power to make this happen in terms of the schools teaching it and young people engaging it. But when you say to the Post or the News, who are in a death battle in New York City, who can find more people showing bust or rear end, that's something that seems to work with the masses, which rhymes.
Well, let me take it from a different aspect, because I get frustrated by the use of the phrase mainstream media, which I think that Rex's newspaper is part of, newspaper is part of, and the phrase mainstream media has become a pejorative. Sarah Palin famously calls it the lamestream media. I mean, what is the definition of mainstream? I mean, it seems to me we're talking about the mainstream being the broad center, as up the middle as possible, not the partisan media. And it's become we're being vilified for being part of the mainstream media. So does that mean there is a mainstream media, there's a right-wing media, and there's a left-wing
media? Okay, the first word you say, okay, mainstream media.
Yeah, what does that come to mind?
The first thing in front, boring. I mean, obviously.
Boring these, me or the phrase no, boring, more mainstream media?
Well, it's all boring. It's boring you, it's boring me, it's boring the public. As opposed to putting something racy. I mean, one more wiener joke.
The mainstream media has become a phrase that is used to denigrate most of the media, most of the what I would call legitimate media or the up-the-middle media. Why is that now a bad word? Do you agree that that's what's happened?
It has, and in no small part a Rush Limbaugh initial creation. You know, he was the one who, I think, first started really using the word as a contrast to what he does, and he's right. It is different.
That's right. So then if you're complaining about the mainstream media and you're part of the media, that means that you're not part of the mainstream. That means you're part of the extreme media on one side or the other.
Ah.
So is that what we want most of our media to be, the extreme media? I mean, I want most of my media to be mainstream, to be able to recognize stories and report on stories and let the chips fall where they may on the left or the right. I don't want to be viewed as extreme media.
Well, there are right-wingers out there who are yelling at their radio as you speak, and they're left-wingers.
Except they're not listening to this, because this is mainstream media.
No, they may be listening to this, and we hear from them from time to time. And then there will be people who are anti-capitalist who will be saying, mainstream media is nothing more than a tool for the, reigning powers. So, there's another side to this.
Well, then the frame mainstream, I mean, again, I don't have my handy dictionary in front of me, but I would look up the definition of mainstream and say, if we meet the definition of mainstream, if you believe that mainstream is a dirty word, then let's call us something else. But mainstream to me still does not sound to be a phrase that suggests extremism or a phrase that it suggests inaccuracy or overblowing. I mean, I don't know, is the New York Post mainstream media?
It sells 700,000
copies. It is considered part of the mainstream media, but it's sort of on the right fringe of the mainstream. I don't know. I just think I'm proud to be a former publisher of a mainstream media newspaper, because that's what I was brought up to be. We are part of the mainstream. We are covering the news for the people who we serve, and they are the mainstream. They are our readers.
So noted.
What is ironic in that regard?
I guess the sense that you want.
So noted.
Is WAMC a mainstream media, or is it a left-wing station?
No, I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that we play every sort of point of view.
No, I'm not putting it down. I'm just suggesting. Wouldn't you want to position yourself as mainstream, or maybe not?
No, I'm bored by the whole thing.
You're bored.
What's ironic, of course, is that Limbaugh and his ilk attack the mainstream media from their positions of great power. They talk about the powerful media is out against us. And, of course, he's the biggest
broadcaster in the country. He's on WABC Radio, the largest talk radio station in the country. Is that not mainstream?
Although I've been reading spates of stories about people who think, let's get rid of Rush by leaning on the advertisers.
Well, one of the main carriers of his show, one of the companies that owns dozens of radio stations that carries Limbaugh, is making no bones about the fact that Limbaugh is losing money. That is, his advertising is way down, stemming from the time that he attacked the young woman.
And there is some discussion that at the completion of his contract, he's going to go leave WABC and WOR in New York would be his base, and then WABC would lose that large hole of listeners and whatever revenue they still generate.
Then there's always the question of who those listeners are. You know, there's that apocryphal story. I'm sure it's apocryphal.
Could be apocryphal. Yeah. I'd like to think it's true.
the department store goes to...
Murdoch goes to a department store to try to sell an ad, and Macy's says, Rupert, your readers are our shoplifters.
Yes, but the advertisers who have been with Limbaugh...
Number 52.
Well done.
But the advertisers who have supported Limbaugh for years must feel that that money has been well spent, and now they're beginning to have second thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they would not have spent millions on Limbaugh's show if they were not getting a return.
And many did pull out. Many of the big advertisers did pull out after some of his more recent outrageous statements. Well, maybe they're just getting tired of him, like, as you were saying, media are of the president. I don't know. Anyway, there's got to be more of this coming, but not today. Sorry, folks.
Is that time already?
Or isn't that an amazing thing?
I wanted to talk about how we're not doing enough. The electronic media, mea culpa, is not doing enough to cover newspapers.
Well, we'll have to get to that next week.
I wanted to talk about that.
Okay, next week. Join us for the Media Project then.
Now, newspaper men are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding,
They all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policies and actions.